play debate.
Hey, it's The Great Debates.
I'd love like a dance hall disco remix of The Great Debates theme.
Good.
If anybody wants to call. Send us that.
Yeah. Who's out there ready to remix? Let me know. I might be able to get the stems for you.
Marshmallow Head, if you're out there, whatever, David Guetta.
David Guetta, DJs? Yeah, David Guetta.
I don't know anything about DJs.
Is he a Marshmallow Head?
I don't know. You know what I'm talking about, Marshmallow, the guy, I don't know.
Paris Hilton is a DJ also, right?
Oh, she's fantastic as a DJ.
Is it
she's
just one, me, or is DJ. Her name starting to bounce around more?
She's coming back. Lately. Oh, very cool. That'd be a very cool comeback.
She's coming back. It's hot.
Whatever.
This is not host chat.
No.
We're in the debates. I've got a micro debate. Welcome back to the Great Debate Studios, guys.
Thank you.
Healy, let's take the pro. Let's have you take the pro on this regional top.
All right.
If you're from Needham, you can say you're from Boston.
Okay. I'm Steve Healy. I'm taking the pro. Dave and I are both from the same town, Needham, Massachusetts, which if you're speaking to someone who is not from the Boston area, it's just simpler and more descriptive to say, where are you from? I'm from Boston. In a casual conversation, I think that's acceptable. I think if you're talking to someone who has a nuanced understanding of the region or the conversation proceeds a little bit more, then you can get into details and specifics. But I think usually where are you from is kind of just like an initial starter in the conversation, and shorthanding it is fine. To shorthand Needham with Boston gets the message across. You're saying where you're from. You're saying where you're coming from. I think that's fine.
Simplicity is not what people are looking for when they ask you where you're from. They want to know what was your upbringing like, what is the character of the people that you grew up with. And Needham is a very different place than Boston. And Needham is not Boston. And Needham borders Boston just barely. But for our listeners who don't know, Needham is a relatively posh, beautiful, upper middle class suburb that is not at all what comes to mind when people picture Boston. And you're doing your questioner a disservice if you don't say something like, I'm from outside Boston, or I'm from the suburbs of Boston, or I'm from Needham, Massachusetts, suburb of Boston. It's very simple to add one word, outside. It'd be just as simple to say I'm from New York, but that's untrue as it is to say I'm from Boston. That is also untrue. You're not from Boston. They're very different places. Maybe not geographically, but to people, let me put it this way, both to people who are from the Boston area and to people who aren't from the Boston area, the distinction is a very important one, because the way you grew up in Needham is very different than the way you grew up in Boston.
Dave has some interesting points there, but let me throw this out there. Even if you say, even if you are from Boston, there's all different kinds of ways you can be from Boston. You could live in a townhouse in Louisville Square, or you could be from, you know, the slums of Roxbury or something.
That's like, true.
There's a range of being from a place. So you're never going to get that much information about your background out when you're saying the name
of
the place.
Here's one definitive way you can't be from Boston. Being from Needham.
Again, Dave, back to your point about simplicity. Like, simplicity.
That was your point.
No. You said what people don't want when you talk to them is simplicity.
It's simple to say you're from Boston.
Yes. And then you said what people don't want when they ask where you're from is simplicity.
That's
disagree.
Right.
Think people just want to get it over with and move on. The shorthanding of saying.
I would say the more important thing is accuracy. I would think that the first thing people want is to not be lied to. And it is important to not to lie someone who asks you. To lie to someone who asks you where you're from. So I would say, simplicity may be important, but again, as I said, you could simply say outside Boston, suburbs of Boston, near Boston. There's so many ways to say it that are more accurate and more truthful and give the person a better sense of where you're actually from.
It's not a lie, because in the way of conversational parlance...
Nope. Boy. I wish I could know what came after the phrase conversational parlance.
you'll die guessing.
Ooh, I'm going with Dave.
Dave made a strong case.
He did, right?
Good one. I felt pretty good.
Yeah.
Now, what do you say when this comes up?
I usually do say, like, outside Boston, but I also think it's fine to say Boston.
I've started, don't you think that's a lie?
No, I think in like conversational parlance, people say Boston.
I've started just saying Massachusetts.
Oh, I don't.
But
I don't
is that
like
a lie
that.
Too?
No, that's it implies, obviously true.
I know it's true, but in a way, it's less. It's like it suggests I'm from like the wilderness or something.
Well, to take Dave's point, like the idea is to start a conversation that, you know, you start large and you zero in on where you're from and talk about your sort of upbringing and the regional quality thereof.
I actually think if you say, see, now I don't like saying I'm from Massachusetts just because I think it's like a weird, it's an ungainly phrase or whatever. Not ungainly.
Oh, God forbid a phrase be ungainly.
That's not the word I was looking for, but it's an ugly word to have to say out loud.
It's a beautiful word.
Okay, well, that's
Massachusetts?
Not, but my point is
that's
this.
A whole separate debate.
It is.
Yeah.
And we'll do it next, right now. No. Okay. I think that if you say to
we'll
the
do
average,
it live.
If that? Yeah, you say to the average American or like person from California or something, like I'm from Massachusetts, I think they have a better guess as to what your life was like than if you said I'm from Boston, because I think they are like, oh, okay, you grew up with massholes, whereas, or you might be a masshole yourself, whereas if you say you're from Boston, they maybe don't know what to think, because like most cities, there's a larger range of person from there.
I think that the place that people are most, anyone who's from anywhere near Chicago always says they're from Chicago, I think.
I don't know. I think people from like,
I don't think anyone is ever like, I'm from Evanston. No, they're always just like Chicago. And I think we just accept that like you can lump yourself in with the nearest metropolis if you're within 15 minutes of it.
I would never say that I was from Sacramento.
Hmm. Yeah.
But I would certainly say that I was from a small town near Sacramento.
Do you ever say you're from Yolo County?
Frequently.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what's up.
From the Yolo County region.
I was born in Woodland, California, which is the county seat of Yolo County.
Cool. I was born in Boston.
So was I.
There you go. Yeah,
calm down.
Guys, let's just, because we've been taking so much time off and we're back with season two of The Great Debates, let's have a second micro.
Great.
Oh,
I'm
yeah,
declaring
that's a
good idea. November's second micro month.
The two micro month.
And I've got the second micro right here.
Oh,
Steve
yeah.
Healy taking the pro. Jewish food is gross.
Jewish food is delicious.
What?
It's good.
What?
I like eating a lot of it. But it's also just objectively gross. It's messy. It's sloppy. We're talking about corned beef sandwiches, white fish on a bagel, cream cheese on a bagel. I like all these things, but I think they're gross. It's just like kind of gross, nasty food. I think that's a lot of what people like about it. It has this tactile sloppiness, sauce, overflowing abundance. But I think it's gross.
Sauce overflowing.
Yeah.
What Jewish dish has sauce?
If you're having
overflowing?
If you're biting into a Reuben sandwich and that Russian dressing is coming out the seams of your bread, it's all over your sauerkraut. That is delicious. Great. Wish I had one right now. Gross.
You put too much dressing on it. I don't know.
No,
what
I'm never making one myself. I'm getting it at Greenblatt's.
I don't think Jewish food is gross. I think that it's like basically if you have, I mean, gross has too negative a connotation for things that you think are like delicious, and like sloppy is substantially different than gross. And like while Jewish food, first of all, I don't think that Jewish food is sloppy. I'll go to that in a second. But I also think that like if the taste and the desirability of something is so great that you yourself admit that you want it, you wish you had one right now, then I think almost by not definition, but by connotation, I don't think it can be gross. Now, let's talk about whether Jewish food is, as you maybe more accurately you said, sloppy or not. I don't think a bagel with cream cheese on it is any more sloppy than like your average sandwich from Subway or a sandwich that, you know, you would make just at home. It all depends like how much actual cream cheese you're putting on there. There's nothing gross about like lox and tomato and onions. I mean, fresh ingredients, all depends on like the ingredients you use. You seem to have this weird fascination with the amount of sauce and cheese that people are putting on things. But like there's certainly nothing gross about more traditional Jewish fare like matzo ball soup or a kreplach or a knish. There's nothing gross about that. They're actually nicely well contained. There's a reason actually that like in New York it's a popular snack for people to get while they're on the go, because it is tidy and it's like a little knish is a little thing you can stop into whatever that place is on Houston, the name I forget, and you can get one to go, and you, if you want, you squirt a little mustard on there and it's great. It's not gross at all.
I would say tidy food is like a Japanese bento box. That's a culture that's obsessed with the tidiness of their food. Now, I actually kind of think sushi is like a lot less appealing to me than a Reuben sandwich. But I think there's a grossness to it.
That you use the word appealing. Like, for most people, the words appealing and gross are words that have opposite meanings. And I think you're playing it a little too fast and loose here with like what the thing either looks like, or again, you just keep talking about things that are like spilling over to the sides. But that's not a grossness. Like, there's a reason, in fact, actually, that like, and I, you know, like in Carl's Jr. ads or something, like a little bit. Oh, damn.
Okay, I do want to hear about the Carl's Jr.
Well,
ads.
You know what I'm going to say, that like in the ads, they like, they'll like plop it down and like a little bit of sauce will even like fall on the...
Carl's Jr. is 100% gross.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but it can't be gross and appetizing at the same time.
Sure you can. That's the whole point.
That's the whole point?
Yeah.
Of what?
That's the issue I wanted to get at in this debate.
Well, and we I got wanted to win. I don't know.
You think you got at it?
I definitely think we got at that idea, yeah.
I think it was a parlor trick. And I'm going with Dave.
Yeah, you can't. This isn't. We're not here to like raise issues. We're here to debate the facts.
A good debate gets at some key issues.
Yeah,
and meaning.
No, that's true. That's true. Good.
But like, oh man, now I'm upset. You just came here because you like made this. Damn, this was like just you thought a clever observation you had, and you wanted to and you snuck it into this conversation about Jewish food.
Well, actually, I just wanted to hear you talk about it, and I wanted to see how close we would flirt with the line of anti-Semitism.
Interesting.
Well, I thought it would be kind of thrilling.
Wow. Yeah. Was it thrilling?
Nah, it was boring. Yeah, I think Dave had a strong case.
He did, yeah. Ah, wow. Two debates down, one host chat to go.
It's host chat.
Oh! Yeah! Oh! A
couple things I want to talk about in this host chat.
Great.
The other day, I lashed out. I was working the Great Debates Twitter feed, and I really lashed out at somebody.
You did?
Yeah. I was trying to stimulate the listeners to give some tops, and I was joking around, having some laughs on the Twitter, and somebody tweeted at Great Debates, "How high are you?"
Oh, yeah.
And it really pushed my buttons.
It did.
Yeah. This pushes my buttons as a comedy writer and whatever, because I think like there's too much assuming that any kind of creative idea or weird way of thinking or like, I've heard John Cleese complain about this in interviews too, like, you know, that you see Monty Python, you're like, you guys must have been, where are you smoking when you're doing that? No, we're creative people working hard at coming up with interesting ideas. Now, then the guy said, he was like, hey, man, that's a topic, which he maybe doesn't know how our topics work, whatever, maybe new to the debate. Mm-hmm. Anyway, I lashed out. It's not common for me to lash out.
Well, and what did you say?
I just said, I really resent that. I'm not high at all.
Well, why is it so offensive to you that you might be high?
Because I think it diminishes creative work.
I see.
To suggest that, you know, you're just getting high and spewing whatever you say rather than working on coming up with something interesting.
Do you think that like getting like that weed is like a performance enhancing drug for comedians?
Fascinating.
For some people, I think so. Yeah. I think a lot like alcohol, like, you know, it has a sort of starter engine kind of thing, but then beyond that, it's probably going to be diminishing. What do you think?
Yeah, I think you're right. I think that for some people it does seem to help, like at times, or at least to like generate ideas or something.
I think there is a real block in people's creativity of like sort of shutting yourself down too early, and I think that weed or alcohol or other drugs can like give yourself permission to have kind of follow
reduce
a thought,
inhibitions.
Shut down the editor a bit more and let the creator out.
Interesting. I feel like there's something underneath the surface here that we haven't gotten to.
That's why I brought it up.
But it's about you personally.
Well, let's see if we can get to it.
Well, you know? Why? Because you so rarely get upset.
I know. It was so surprising. Well, I will say, I had a couple drinks.
You yourself were surprised.
You had a couple drinks.
Yeah.
Right.
I'd been out to dinner with my bud, and we'd had a few mint juleps.
When you have a few drinks, you get angry quicker.
Yes.
Than when you haven't had a few drinks.
Yeah, for sure.
Well, but also, he was, to a certain extent, right then.
Mm-hmm. Well, in a way.
You were high. Yeah. In the old days, we would have called that getting high.
Yeah. Mm. This is only occurring to you now, that the man had a point? I don't know. I can't believe this. You're like, how dare he?
I wish.
Well, how dare he say how high I was?
I think the Twitter handle, whoever that was out there, I wish you could see Healy's smile right now of sort of self-recognition.
Well, I think that as you make a good point, which is like, how dare, when somebody's going, how dare he, usually that's like a pretty good tell that they did it, right?
Doth protest too
much. Yeah.
But. I'm surprised that it took us. I thought that if that, like, given that that were the story, I would have assumed you would have, like, come out and told us on your own. Like, now the little twist here is
I meant to tell it that way and somehow it just didn't.
Drunk or something. Yeah. Okay,
I thought it was interesting that I wasn't high, but I had had a drink or two.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Phone foods.
Here we go.
Phone foods.
Will foods that you are capable of eating while holding your phone in the other hand, like, experience a whole renaissance? Like, will the phone change
food? Yeah, phone foods.
Or are we already there?
Well, I think it's interesting. Mm-hmm. The phone certainly has changed the way we eat already. How? I'll tell you.
Thank you. Mm-hmm.
Instagram, restaurants, and cafes and coffee shops all have, like, are consciously making their food more photographable.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's very vibrant and beautiful, the food these days.
But I don't know that, so you're wondering, like, will one-handed foods become more
correct?
Could you argue that a bowl is a phone food?
Yeah, like I think a bowl is a great phone food.
Right, because it has the side walls there. Chipotle,
nothing but phone foods on the menu.
Yeah, it's all phone food.
Well, if you'd like to invest in Healy's new company, Phone Foods, email us at greatdebates69@gmail.com.
I'm not getting into the phone food business. Oh, I'm just a cultural observer.
Speaking of cultural observations, I have a debate topic.
Wonderful.
This is good host chat.
Thanks.
Way to go, man.
Thanks,
this is a listener top. The honor goes to Angie L. Angie, thank you for submitting this top. Steve Healy taking the pro.
Yep.
Fresh guacamole made at your table is worth $9.
I hope Dave doesn't try and weasel out on something like, it's actually worth $12, because that would be outrageous. But I think $9 is...
I won't do that. And I think it's understood that she means at least $9.
I'm not sure, actually.
Okay, $9.
She didn't say at least $9.
Right, okay. I'm not going to do what you just said.
Said what she said. I agree with Dave there, yeah.
Yeah, I think it's fun when you're out, you have a bunch of people at the table. You could have as many as 9 people at the table, so maybe you're paying a dollar each to watch a guy make you fresh guacamole. That's really special. Yeah, I'd say that's a great deal.
That's it? That's your opening statement?
Yeah,
start there. Well, I mean, just right there. See, so it's like you had to invent a almost like special occasion for it to be worth it. You're out with a bunch of your friends.
Oh, it's a special occasion thing. You don't have guacamole made at your table every time. No.
Well,
not every meal.
Part of the problem right there.
I bet
you would if it were $3. If it were $3 to have fresh guac made at your table, you're damn right you would.
Sure.
Well, then it's worth $3 and it's not worth $9.
No. Things can be worth different amounts based on like how special they are,
right.
Different times.
And as you've said, it requires a special occasion for it to be worth $9. That to me like actually just immediately proves the case that the market value is not $9.
Well, you know, like a really nice steak is worth $40, but you don't want it every night.
No, but that's okay, but that's what but that's different
it's
than whether it's a special
thing.
Occasion or not.
It's a special
you said
thing.
You have to be there with a bunch of friends and like it's a special
I was
thing.
Hypothesizing a situation where you're with a bunch of friends. I could see myself paying $9 just to watch the guy make guac for me. It'd be kind of fun.
Here's the problem with here's why it's not worth $9. I don't want to watch a guy at the side of the table make almost anything. I feel it's like part of the like joy of going out to eat is that you don't have to like you're paying for not having made the food, you're paying for someone else to make the food, and you're also paying to not have to interact with the people who made your food. Now you actually have to like watch
I'm not interacting with that guy. I want him to focus on the
good luck. Good luck, buddy, because he's got some questions for you.
No, he's focusing on grinding it up.
How does that look
you're
for you?
You're going down a
do
different...
Do you want some jalapenos in
you're
there?
You're taking us to a different debate, which is how guacamole tableside guac guy should talk to the customers and ask their preferences.
I'm raising
different
one of
topic
the
for another
are,
day.
Healy, I'm raising one of the issues that is involved with tableside preparation of guacamole. I'm going to say something else about guacamole.
Uh-oh.
I think that the preparation of guacamole is like less appealing than the finished product. And there's something about the actual like grinding of these like oily chunks of avocado that like as you watch that, I'd rather just get the finished product. I don't want to think about that. Like, I mean, it's actually almost like making me gag.
That's
to think
a
about
you
it.
Thing. Like, I actually find that amazing. Like, that's a transform. Like, it's like I'm watching an alchemist. It's very cool to see that happen.
About it. It doesn't change more color. So, it's like
you know what
most,
else? This is occurring to me now.
To prepare tableside,
you're
like,
learning something
changes.
By watching this guy. You're learning how to make guacamole. It's that amazing they give this away for $9.
That's ridiculous. That's true of like any food preparation. Also, like it's not
I'm
that
open
hard
to make I like
guacamole.
When they make a salad by your table. I like a lot of tableside prep.
I mean, you could if you really wanted to know how do you make your guacamole, they would say like three avocados, squirt of lime juice.
No,
and
but you know that you
thing.
Need to see how it's done, what kind of tool
how,
the guy
what,
has.
What are you possibly going to learn from the guy? Oh, he used
I
that
I'm forgetting the
pestle.
Spanish word for that kind of thing.
Wow.
Doing it right. How
oh,
much
you stop
torque
when it's
he's
that
putting
ground
in there.
Down.
Yeah.
I probably could have gleaned that from the consistency
okay,
of the finished
great.
Product.
Good for you. You're a wizard at making guacamole. I'm not see another guy's technique. Or woman.
Oh, how
could
very woke of you.
Person of color. Doesn't have to be cis.
Okay. Doesn't have to be cis.
$9. Here you go.
Yeah, $9 is too much. That's the, again, like the price point is everything.
Finally, we've gotten somewhere. Okay. Tell
well,
me more.
I've already explained to you why it's actually like a burden to have someone
to you.
With
you don't like it. I get
I
that.
I just don't understand what is the like why. I mean, $9 is too much for basically what amounts
let's
to
work
a
it back.
Dip.
For in most of the country, avocados cost a dollar or two each. You're going to use three or four in guac, depending on how many people you have, plus the other ingredients, plus the work at the table. Yeah, $9 works out about right. We want a living wage for these people, so yeah, it's going to take them a couple minutes to make it. I think nine. I think I would actually $10 to $12.
A great thing happened, which is Healy said, let's work out the math. And then he clicked open his pen and went to his notepad and then proceeded to write down exactly nothing as he realized that the numbers were like very simple arithmetic. Yeah, I don't think the
I always like in the presidential debates, by the way, I always like how obviously somebody tells the candidates to like
write
down,
something
they
down.
They always write a phrase and circle it.
Well, the other one that is crazy to me is I don't know how many people watch Real Sports with Brian Gumbel, but every time they show a video clip, they come back to Brian Gumbel in the studio and he's writing something down as if like he's going to be quizzed on what he's producing.
In the entire world, is there a more humorless man than Brian Gumbel? Like, does he ever make a joke or have any kind of fun?
Witticisms. Look, the prices, whether or not it's a fair price for guacamole based on avocados and like the going rate of like kitchen labor is not the question. Question is, are you going to pay
how
for it?
We determine, you know, what something costs.
No, you determine the cost of something based on how desirable it is and how much people are willing to pay for it. And if people were willing to pay $30 for it, the price of avocados would have nothing to do with it. You know that. They're not willing to pay $30 for it. I'm not willing to pay $9 for it. To preparing a tableside? Like guacamole tableside? What is the... You're watching a man grind something up? Why is it that hard to make... I don't know. Like, this is all kind of mind-boggling to me. This is my closing statement. I don't understand what the attraction is. Keep it in the kitchen. The final product is better than the product and process. I don't want to see how the sausage is made. I don't want to see how the guac is made. I don't want to pay dollars. I don't want to pay $9 for guac, whether it's tableside, whether it's kitchen side, whether it's... outside.
Something,
how about that?
Something special and fresh and rare, prepared with craft and technique in an interesting style in front of you so you can see how it's done. That is absolutely worth $9. Plus a delicious, we didn't even get to how delicious guacamole is.
It's fine.
And they're throwing in the chips for free, by the way.
Mm.
I didn't even factor that in.
That doesn't count. The chips don't count.
I'm going with heels.
Okay,
thanks.
Whatever.
I mean, come on.
No, I can see it. Okay. I just don't agree with you, but I can see it.
Do you really not like to see the performative creation of tableside guacamole?
I mean, it does nothing for me.
It may just be the idea of it that's more appealing than the actual practice, but like, there's something attractive about it for sure.
I just feel like anytime someone is like standing next to you, you limit the like scope of conversations that you can have. I don't like that.
What are you talking about that you can't talk Wouldn't about like in front of the guac guy?
You.
What a great time I just had here on The Great Debates with you guys.
It's been fun.
I love it. I love
it's
both of
so
you.
It's so good to be back in the studio.
I love nice. Our listeners.
I love our listeners.
Me too. It's great to know that you're out there. Guys, hit us up. Let us know that you're out there. We're at GreatDebate69 everywhere. Our email is greatdebate69@gmail.com. We love hearing from you, reading your letters, considering your tops, debating your tops.
And sorry to the guy I lashed out out there.
Hey, that's nice.
Yeah, he was.
Apologize. He was clearly
he
right.
He had me. He had me dead to rights.
On that note, guys, we'll see you next week on The Great Debates. Nothing less, nothing more. I told him I didn't have it, then close my door. Tell me how much a dime cost. The Great Debates is produced by Mark Caracello. The theme song was composed by Christopher Knight. The debaters are Steve Healy and Dave King. And the podcast is moderated by Dan Medina.